Representative Abrams, if you're ready, we're going to start. We don't quite have a quorum, but if you'd like to start as soon as we get a quorum, we'll officially call the meeting to order. And if you'd like to let us know what bill you'd like to take up first, that would be great.
Well, I have witnesses, Madam Chair. I have witnesses here on House File 3696.
Okay.
Members, House File 3696 is the International Economic Development Zone that passed last year. There are a number of relatively minor changes that have to be made to the law that passed. I believe you, Madam Chair, have an amendment dealing with the traffic study, and as near as I can tell, in talking with both House and Senate staff, sometimes unforeseen things happen, and in this case, that language was simply dropped without any policy a thought by any of the conferees. It was simply the House thought that the Senate put the language in, and the Senate thought the House put the language in, so I understand you have an amendment, and there was certainly no public policy reason for the language to have been dropped. I didn't know about it, Madam Chair, until you told me about it, as a matter of fact. Major changes in the bill that's before you today provides in Section 1 that the exemption on property tax will start until tax is payable in 2011. Section 2 and 3 deal with the corporate minimum fee. Section 4 is the sales tax exemption for purchases by qualified businesses in the International Economic Trade Zone. Section 5 authorizes a city, county, town, or other public subdivision to apply for federal foreign trade zone powers. Section 6 delays the date required for the designation of the zone by 2 years to June 30, 2008. The start of the duration of the zone would be delayed for 3 years to 2010. Section 7 requires copies of the business plan to be provided to the legislature in a timely fashion for use in reports of the legislature. Section 8 provides that the jobs credit applies only during the duration of the zone. Section 9 makes a conforming change for the base year, and Section 10 indexes the jobs credit. Section 11 extends the availability of the $750,000 in grants from fiscal 2007 through fiscal midway through fiscal 2011. I have with me today, Madam Chair,
Representative Abrams, if you can hold just 1 minute. We now have a quorum. I'll officially call the meeting to order. The next item on our agenda is roll call. Ms. Bratt will note the roll. Third item is approval of the minutes from the March 30th meeting. Representative Magnus moves approval of the meeting minutes for March 30th. Are there any additions or corrections? Seeing none, all those say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The minutes are adopted. Representative Abrams, would you like to move your bill to be considered by the committee, please?
I will move House File 3696, and I think it's appropriate, Madam Chair, to put on the A2 amendment, which is the amendment that I described earlier that had been dropped in conference by mistake.
Certainly. Representative Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, the bill that I have doesn't have Section 10 and 11 in it, and he spoke to Section 10 and 11.
Huh. Now that's interesting because the House Research Report is as introduced, and I'm looking at the bill, Representative Leader, and you're absolutely right. Section 9 is the grant. There is no Section 10 or 11.
Oh.
Representative Abrams.
He's absolutely.
Yep. Would you like Sections 10 and 11 to be in your bill?
I suspect, Representative Leader, here's my experience. Once a year, Joel Michael makes a mistake. We have here a House file, which is as introduced, and it has only 9 sections in it. We have here a House research summary with 11 sections.
We just got to renumber that.
There's either a numbering problem or whatever, because I read the bill last night and it's all in here, Representative Leader. So we won't give Joel his cookie tomorrow because we found his one mistake a year.
And Representative Abrams, what would you like to do with this? Do you want this to lay it on the table so we figure it out? Do you want to move it the way it is?
I think it's all there, Madam Chair. I'd like the bill to be referred to taxes.
Okay.
Or it may end up being an omnibus public finance bill.
All right. Well, let's take care of the A2 amendment. Again, as Representative Abrams said, this was language that was included in the bill originally that somewhere got lost inadvertently in the process. It was an issue that was important to myself and Dakota County that we have some documentation as far as the transportation impacts for the region, and so we would like to get this back in the bill. Are there any questions on the A2 amendment? Anybody in the audience like to speak in opposition to the A2 amendment? Seeing none, Representative Abrams renews his amendment or his motion to adopt the A2 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The amendment is adopted.
Madam Chair, we have the answer. On page 2 of the summary, Representative Leader and members, it should be Section 8 is the jobs training credit timing. That's Subdivision 1 of Section 8. What is listed here as Section 9 is Subdivision 2. And what's listed here as Section 10 is Subdivision 3, which then makes Section 11 actually Section 9. I will send this upstairs, Representative Leader, so that this mistake doesn't occur again, and I'll put your name on it.
Madam Chair?
Are there any questions? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Abrams, you said Section 8 is jobs credit timing?
That's correct.
And is there a Subdivision 1 then that goes underneath that? I thought you said the way it looks here, jobs credit on a base year is Subdivision 2.
Representative Anderson, if you look at the bill lines 5.30 through 6.8, that's Subdivision 1, which is the job credit timing. 6.9 through 6.21 deals with the job credit base year. And 6.22 through 6.29 deals with the indexing, which equates the Section 10 on the House Research Summary.
All right. Is there any questions?
Okay.
All right. Representative Abrams, I see you have a testifier here. If you'd like to state your name for the record and provide brief testimony, we would appreciate it.
Madam Chair, I'm Maury Anderson, and I'm representing the Metropolitan Foreign Trade Zone Commission. And just very briefly, the legislation that you have before us is really necessitated by issues relative to land assembly in the Rosemont area and the opportunity to do that correctly in conjunction with the business plan development, and then also the recognition that when we get to doing the zone designation, we do have to go through the U.S. Department of Commerce, which may extend our time periods somewhat, so it's a matter of just extending that time period to allow those things to work in a smooth and uniform way.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Are there any questions of the testifier? Is anybody in the audience that would like to speak in opposition to House File 3696 as amended? Representative Abrams.
I'd like to renew my motion, Madam Chair.
All those in favor of House File 3696 as amended being recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Taxes, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The motion is adopted. Thank you very much, Representative Abrams. And the next bill that you would like to consider?
Why don't we do 3682, Madam Chair?
All right. Thank you, members. You will recognize this as the authority to do bonding in the public finance bill. Representative Abrams.
I would move that House File 3682 be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Taxes. And Judd, of course, is with us. House File 3682 is the annual authority. I think this committee has had a great deal of testimony regarding what the Metropolitan Council has done with the authority that they have had in the past with the issuance of bonds either this month or next month. The amount of authority that will be at the council will be approximately $40 to $43 million, I believe. And a lot of these projects have a year, 2 year, 3 year lead time. If the question is it essential that this pass this year? The answer is no. If the question is, would it be more effective? Would the money be more effective? And would the planning be better? And will the money be better utilized if they have the authority passed this year? The answer is yes. So Judge Checkman from the Metropolitan Council is here to talk about what the current proposal is.
Welcome to the committee, Judge Checkman from Met Council and also from Lakeville.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members, and thank you, Representative Abrams. The council is back before the committee today with our request for 2006 for $32 million in regional transit bonding. We do have one minor error that I haven't had a chance to talk to Representative Abrams about. The bill, when it was drafted, lists $32 million. We actually have the ability to add another $800,000 to that in order to to be able to allow our property taxes to remain flat, as we've discussed before. But what we have before you is the list on the second page of the handout that lists the $32.8 million worth of projects that we'll be able to use. You'll be able to see that this is not just only Metro Transit, there's also Metro Mobility and members from the opt-out communities, which are also known as the Suburban Transit Authority, and Tom Pohl from the STA is here to testify on behalf of this bill in support as well. So if you have any specific questions, I'd be happy to answer that. Otherwise, we've been to the committee and have discussed this earlier this year as well.
Mr. Shetman, what's your unexpended authority currently? I think, was it $70 or $80 million?
Madam Chair and members, we currently have, I believe, $76 million worth of unexpended transit bonding. As Representative Abrams expressed earlier, this May we will be levying an additional $43 million of that in order to handle the projects that we have been in plans for the past 2 or 3 years. And one of the reasons why we do that is because these large capital projects like bus purchases and certain other things that we do with this money, we have to have the cash in hand before we can purchase those, or have the authority in hand before we can purchase those types of investments. And that is why if we know in advance a year or two, we generally like to have a year and a half to 2 years, if we know in advance that the legislature has given us that authority, then we can go ahead and start the contracts with the different bus providers or bus builders and get those in order.
And so with your current $76 million, you basically have a year and a half to 2 years of unexpended authority right now.
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Thank you. Representative Leader, I thought you had a question.
No, it's probably not a question, Madam Chair. But is Delano in isn't that in Wright County?
Yes.
I see you have Delano replaced for buses. Is that the Metro Council, basically, that?
Mr. Shetland.
Madam Chair and Representative Leader, I'm trying to look here on the...
It's under other providers on the center of your second page.
Madam Chair and Representative Leader, that is a community-based dial-a-ride bus service that we provide, but it is a Delano community provider that they would be eligible for regional transit bonding in order to pay for that bus.
Representative Leader.
Madam Chair, I'm not questioning it. I mean, I'm not disputing it, but I'm wondering because you only cover, it doesn't cover in your counties. Chisago is not in your metro seven counties or eight counties either now, is it?
Madam Chair, that's a very good question because there is a specific taxing district within the metropolitan area that pays the bonds. And even though it's only $59,000, I don't believe that Delano is in the transit taxing district. So I would hope that we can kind of keep that in for now and get further information as to that issue. you know, there's another question. If Hastings is within the transit tax district, and there's $118,000 there.
That's right.
So, you know, as one who pays the tax, I like people getting more transit options, but on the other hand, they often have the opportunity to pay as well.
Well, and Representative Abrams, this administration has in the past exhibited their willingness to take revenues from the transit taxing district and extend it on projects outside of the border of the district, so I would assume that you would happily follow up on this issue as well.
Yes.
Any additional questions? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Shetland, the transit facility land acquisition, on the bottom of that page, it says, what land are we appropriating or purchasing?
Mr. Shetland.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, I'm going to invite Arlene McCarthy, who's our Director of Metropolitan Transportation Services, to come up and address that question. Relating to the Delano question, Representative Leader, I will find out. I received this list from our folks in the Transportation Planning Services, and I will make sure that is answered and explained for the committee, and I will make sure you receive an explanation before this goes to the tax committee, or if it does.
Ms. McCarthy.
Thank you.
Madam Chair and committee members, again, my name is Arlene McCarthy. I'm with the Metropolitan Council. The specific property that is being intended for the $50,000, I want to confirm that and get back to the committee along with the other information so I know the exact facility, because I am uncertain of the exact facility that is planned for within Metro Transit.
Madam Chair, I just expressed that as a concern of the other things that have been brought up along with some of these descriptions are pretty vague and there's no specifics to it, and I'm concerned about, as I would think Mr. Abrams would be concerned about, where and how this money is being spent and on what. So,
thank you, Representative. Any additional questions? Ms. McCarthy, did you want to add something briefly?
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Mr. Shipman, he's familiar with this, and this is a facility in Minneapolis. It's adjacent to our Haywood Transit facility, which is our largest bus garage, and it's for an expansion. Well, it's basically for a second bus garage in Minneapolis.
Madam Chair and Representative Anderson, and that property is a rag stock property that is just adjacent to the Haywood garage. So mm-hmm. to answer specifically, the land acquisition is for the rag stock property that is just adjacent to our Haywood facility.
Thank you. Representative Abrams.
I understand it's a willing buyer and a willing seller.
Thank you, Mr. Abrams. With the end of the window coming up in a few days, there's a lot of questions being thrown in our faces. So.
Any additional questions? Anybody in the audience that would like to speak in opposition to House File 3682? Seeing none, Representative Abrams.
Renew my motion that House File 3682 be recommended passed and referred to the Committee on Taxes.
Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed say nay. Nay. Motion is adopted. And last but not least, we would next have House File 3682. Oh, I'm sorry, 3127.
Madam Chair, do you want to maybe think about this for the omnibus bill, or what would you think about this?
Well, Representative Abrams, I don't know if you've talked to Representative Krenke about whether or not he would like this or not.
So you're trying to put together, Madam Chair, if I may, an omnibus bill that doesn't have to go through the tax committee?
Well, Representative Abrams, I'm still working on Representative Krenke, but I'm afraid no matter what happens, if the word MVEST is in our omnibus bill, we're going to taxes. So,
why don't we try another bill first and then see what happens?
Or if you'd like, we can move this to taxes and then prepare this bill as an amendment to be considered to the bill next Tuesday as well.
That would be, why don't we do both ways, Madam Chair? I would move that House File 3127 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Taxes. And I'd also at this time like to move the DE1 amendment, which puts the bill in a far more understandable shape than the original bill is in. So I would like to move the amendment.
Right, members, Representative Abrams moves the DE1 amendment to House File 3127. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion is adopted. Representative Abrams, you now have the bill as amended.
Great. Madam Chair, you know, sometimes there are good ideas that don't percolate through the lobbying community, and sometimes members come up with the good ideas, and sometimes senators come up with good ideas, and very occasionally DFL senators come up with a good idea. My state senator, Senator Bonoff, when I had a congratulatory luncheon with her, asked me about why the sales tax on lease cars goes into the general fund rather than be treated like the motor vehicle sales tax. And frankly, Madam Chair, I didn't have a very good answer, because as a matter of tax policy, a couple of years ago, the state of Minnesota went from a system in which you would pay a sales tax on your lease on a monthly basis to an upfront sales tax, saying that, well, if you bought a car, you'd have to pay the sales tax up front. So why should it be any different for a leased vehicle? Times have changed, and when you really think about it, if you're paying the sales tax up front for the motor vehicle, that is a motor vehicle sales tax. So I don't know why we would treat, or why tax policy would treat, the upfront payment of the use of the vehicle for a long period of time, defined as greater than 30 days, as the same thing. So what House File 3127 does, as amended, because the bill I got sent over was a mess because it was the Senate that drafted it rather than the House, simply defines that the money collected as the sales tax on leased vehicles will be treated as a motor vehicle sales tax. So whatever formulas that are eventually adopted by this legislature or voted on by the voters, the money would flow exactly the same as the motor vehicle sales tax. So, Madam Chair, I think it's a good idea. I think that the House language is even a better idea than the Senate language. And this is one of those times in which members actually came up with a really neat idea and didn't have to have a whole gaggle of lobbyists to advise them on it. So I would highly recommend House File 3127, outside of course, the fiscal hole it creates, but it's in the out biennium, and around here that just doesn't seem to get people's blood flowing the same as other things do. But I really think that this is a good piece of policy, Madam Chair.
Right. Members, are there any questions for Representative Abrams? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Abrams, how much are we talking about here as far as revenues, and what area does this, how big of an area do we?
Well, Representative Abrams.
Madam Chair, I think fully phased in, Mr. Walls has the number. I think fully phased in, it's about a $60 million item. But Mr. Walls can give you the exact number. One minute.
Mr. Walls.
Madam Chair, Representative Abrams, I have last year's tax spreadsheet. I just have to find the item.
Are there any other questions while we give Mr. Walls a minute to look for the figure? Mr. Walls.
Madam Chair, the item that was in for leased vehicles requiring upfront payment of sales tax that was in the tax bill last year had a number for fiscal year 2006 of $18.9 million and for 2007 of $19.7
million. About $35 to $40 million
a biennium. Which will more than pay for the fiscal note on eminent domain.
Well, we shouldn't talk too loudly, otherwise the governor will try to bond against it.
Oh, okay. All right, are there any additional questions? Is there anybody in the audience that would like to speak in opposition to House File 3127 as amended? Seeing none, Representative Abrams.
I renew my motion that House File 3127 as amended be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes.
All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Motion's adopted. Thank you very much, Representative Abrams.
Thank you.
Yeah, we can do it. Members, just real briefly, there's a amendment in your packet. It's the MB-AMD-08. It's an attempt to address some of the ideas and concerns relative to the railroad improvements or Mercy funds. We put them in your packet for your review. There will likely be an attempt to add this to our omnibus bill next Tuesday if we can come to some kind of committee consensus on the issue. Representative Magnus, do you want to explain the process that you've taken and where you're at with this?
Well, Madam Chair, initially we started talking about this when we had a public political subdivision come into us to talk about some loan money, and that got us to thinking about changing part of this to grant money. And we've had a couple of presentations before the committee on it, and this is the compromise language that you and I have worked out, Madam Chair. Hopefully this will get us to where we want to go. I think the key point is that it differentiates between the private railroad, where they're eligible for up to 40%. The small railroads would be up to 60%. At least 20% of the line percentage, at least 20% of the cost has to come from the railroad itself, basically. So that's where we're at.
Thank you. And members, I think what we tried to do was to make sure that we didn't put in policy that would negate any interest in the revolving loan program, so that there nobody could get all of it in grant, and that we'd try and keep the integrity of that, but recognizing what a benefit a strong rail system could be to relieving some of the congestion on our interstate and road system. So it's something that I hopefully the good minds in this committee will take a few minutes to read and consider over the next week. If you have any other ideas or suggestions, certainly talk to Representative Magnus or myself if you feel you want to go down this track, if you will, or not, and get back to us on it before Tuesday. All right, and then with that, I'm going to turn the gavel over to Representative Ruth so I can do my bill.
Welcome to your committee, Madam Chair.
Thank
you. Would like to move your bill?
I would, thank you. I'd like to move House File 3657 to be considered by the committee. My intent today is that this bill would be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill next week. We have a number of testifiers, and we'd like to start with Mr. McFarland from MnDOT. And members, this is the governor's bonding bill, and working with the Senate, they're also hearing this bill today, so there's a number of testifiers from across the state that are here to speak in support of this initiative, and after they finish here, they'll be walking across the street to testify in Senator Murphy's committee as well.
Good coordinated effort. Great.
Madam Chair, my name is Bob McFarland. I'm an assistant to the commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Transportation. Thank you. Thank you, Representative Holberg. I'm here to describe Representative Holberg's bill, House File 3657. We're busily trying to redo all of the financial plans based on your support for House File 3127. Representative Abrams said, yes, we'll get that money into the financial plan as quickly as we can. So, Madam Chair, members of the committee, the plan put forth by the governor and carried in this legislation is a very simple, direct concept for accelerating highway projects across the state. This is a simple bonding plan with an identified new source of revenue to retire the debt on this plan, both the principal and interest. The governor and this legislation proposes $2.5 billion in state trunk highway bonding over the years 2007 through 17. The new revenue stream that would retire the debt, the principal and interest on this bonding plan, is the anticipated new motor vehicle sales tax revenue that would go to the state trunk highway fund, and the trunk highway fund only, from passage of the constitutional amendment that is on the ballot this fall. The plan before you is contingent on passage of that amendment in November. This plan is a revised and altered plan from the plan that the governor put forth to the legislature in 2005. And it addresses a couple of the concerns, the major concerns that the legislature expressed about the governor's plan last year. Last year, you may recall, the governor proposed $4.5 billion in bonding, with the revenue stream for debt retirement coming from a variety of sources. The legislature expressed two principal concerns about that plan. That was that the bonding was too much. They had concerns about that. And the debt service revenue streams were too ill-defined. So this plan addresses those concerns as expressed by the legislature. The bonding program is now $2.5 billion, not $4.5, and there is a direct new revenue stream dedicated for the debt service. And I think it's very important to note that the motor vehicle sales tax revenue stream that is identified here for debt service will cover more than 96% of the debt service on this plan over the life of the plan. 96% of the debt service on this plan will be covered by the new revenues from the motor vehicle sales tax. Also, as part of the governor's announcement, but not reflected directly in this legislation, is the fact that the governor has announced 22 major highway projects across the state that would be advanced and funded by the proceeds from this plan. There are four metro projects that the governor and MnDOT announced worth $678 million, and 18 greater Minnesota projects identified worth $645 million. In your packets, members, are a couple of maps and a list of the projects that MnDOT has identified and highlighted that would be accelerated with the proceeds from this plan. And I just to mention a few, there are three projects on Highway 61 in northern Minnesota along the North Shore. Improvements to Highway 25 from Buffalo to Monticello. Improvements to Highway 34 from Detroit Lakes to Park Rapids. Two projects on Highway 14 from Owatonna to Waseca and the Waseca Bypass. Two projects on Highway 42 in the southeast part of the state, improvements in Hayter and Cannon Falls. Improvement and expansion of Highway 60 from Worthington to the Iowa border. Projects in Wilmer and the Painesville Bypass to improve Highway 23. In the metro area, two of the four identified projects are the completion of the expansion of Highway 100 in St. Louis Park, and the completion of the new 610 in the northwest suburbs. These projects are projects that have been long highlighted and shown in MnDOT's district, local, and regional priorities, projects that have been waiting on the shelf, ready to go, but for funding to move them forward. The highlighted projects of this package represent just over $1.3 billion of the project's $2.5 billion investment power. So there's just slightly less than $1.2 billion of this plan that has yet to be committed to projects across the state. The message, there are more projects to come as we go through the process. The governor took, and MnDOT took the unusual step, and it is unusual, to actually highlight projects that would benefit from a proposed plan. That is not something that we have done or seen much of in Minnesota. But with the MVEST amendment on the ballot in November, the governor felt it was very important for the citizens and the voters of Minnesota to see the importance of their yes vote. The governor is strongly supportive of the motor vehicle sales tax amendment this coming fall. He initiated that amendment in December of 2004. He supports it strongly and believes that if the citizens see the types of projects across the state that can be accelerated with passage of that amendment, they will be very inclined to vote yes on that amendment. And this is similar to a trend across the country where states and regions that have had various types of transportation funding ballot initiatives have attached specific projects or identified specific projects that would benefit from that initiative when they put those initiatives before the voters. Madam Chair, if I could go through a couple of the debt service facts around this this proposal, and I know debt service is an important question that many members have. The bonding plan is put forth before you. We'll bring over the years 2007 to 2017 about $2.3 billion of additional investment power to the Trunk Highway Fund over what could happen if the amendment doesn't pass and this package does not pass. I would like to refer you to these charts in your packet and just describe them briefly. There are three charts called investment power. And I'll just work from the one, Madam Chair, that's marked investment power unadjusted. These are figures unadjusted for inflation. The blue line of this chart is entirely related to growth in the Trunk Highway Fund over the current $1.1 billion base level of funding in the Trunk Highway Fund today. So this is all anticipated growth. The blue line marks status quo, Madam Chair and members, is what will happen to the Trunk Highway Fund with normal growth over the coming 30 years anticipated if nothing happens. If there's no MVEST constitutional amendment, no other tax increases, it's just the growth to the Trunk Highway Fund from existing revenue streams. The red line shows the Trunk Highway Fund and available revenues in the Trunk Highway Fund with passage of the Motor Vehicle Sales Tax Amendment and passage of the Governor's Bonding Plan against that amendment. You can see that red line shows in fiscal years 2007 through 2017 a very significant increase in investment power to the Trunk Highway Fund by the use of bonding and the use of the MVEST for debt retirement. And I'd be happy to answer any questions about that chart following my testimony, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair?
Representative Abrams?
Madam Chair, what would this chart look like, Mr. McFarland, if there was another whole 60% of $20 million available through redefinition of MVEST under $12 million a year? When it's fully phased in.
Mr. Chairman,
that would, little hole here kind of be filled?
Mr. Chairman, it would be a smaller hole, certainly. By the amount of your redefinition that in the end would go to the Trunk Highway Fund, would actually make it to the Trunk Highway Fund after the amendment, it would make that gap smaller. We could certainly do that for you, Representative Abrams, and calculate a couple of charts so I can get the correct numbers from Mr. Walls.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, as I mentioned earlier, in total over the 30 years of this plan, and that's 10 years of phased-in bonding and then they're 20-year bonds, so it's really a 30-year plan. The motor vehicle sales tax revenues to the Trunk Highway Fund from the amendment, just the amendment, will cover 96.2% of the plan's debt service. These new MVEST revenues, just the new ones from the amendment, as outlined in the bill, will be deposited into a new account called the Motor Vehicle Sales Tax Collection Account. And that will be the account from which the debt service revenues will come. Over the life of this plan, only one-third of 1%, 0.3% of the existing Trunk Highway Fund revenues will be needed to cover the portion of debt not covered by the new MVEST revenues. Less than one-half of 1% of Trunk Highway Fund revenues over the 30-year life of this plan will be needed for debt service on this plan. Madam Chair, at this point I'd like to refer members to this chart. That is the one legal page chart, and I'm going to reference a couple of items on that chart. If members would turn to the second page and look at the bottom line and the totals. What this chart is this is the on your current estimates updated for the February forecast. This is the 30-year plan, debt service and all items related to the governor's plan. Over the life of the governor's plan, in the second column, The debt service on the plan, principal and interest, will be $3.96 billion. The new MVEST revenues over the life of that plan will generate $3.81 billion. The debt service, as I mentioned, not covered by fully by the new MVEST revenues, represents $149 million over the 30-year life of the plan, or as I mentioned, less than one-half of 1% of the Trunk Highway Fund revenues from existing sources that will be available for the Trunk Highway Fund. In fiscal years 2007 through 2029, 100% of the new MVEST revenue will be used for debt service in that time period, plus 11% of the growth to the Trunk Highway Fund from other sources. The current base of funding for the Trunk Highway Fund is never touched. It doesn't even come close to being touched by the debt service on this plan. From fiscal year 2030 to 2038, less than 50% of the projected new MVEST revenues to the Trunk Highway Fund will be needed for debt service. And, Madam Chair, I'd like to point the committee on the first page to fiscal year 2017 on the chart. This is the peak year of debt service under the governor's plan. And in that year, the debt service from the governor's plan that is not covered by new MVEST revenues, plus debt service on existing bonding that's out there, and that a little bit of debt service on the bonds that have been proposed in this legislative session for capital buildings and such for MnDOT, the Mankato headquarters and the Chaska truck station and the like. In fiscal year 17, that accumulated debt service in that year will require 11% of the Trunk Highway Fund in that year. That's the peak year of debt service on this entire plan, is 11% of the Trunk Highway Fund in fiscal year 2017. And it goes down from there. Madam Chair, the benefits of bonding, as the governor has proposed, are many. We can save, by accelerating these projects, we can save very high and existing volatile inflation costs on these major projects. Construction inflation on a whole is running approximately 8 to 12% annually today, with much greater volatility in some commodities and products that we're seeing. There are a couple of news articles in your packet that mention and describe some of the inflation impacts that are facing construction projects today. However, if we use state bonding to accelerate these projects, at most, at the high end, we're looking at 5% interest on the state bonds. The most recent bond sale of trunk highway bonds was in October of 2005 at 3.9% interest rates. So we're looking at that kind of cost of money against that kind of cost of inflation. But even more important, Madam Chair, are the user benefits of accelerating these projects. They're subjective, they're qualitative, they're hard to quantify, but I don't know how you can put a price on the congestion relief we have seen from projects such as 494 and 694 in the metro area. Some of the safety improvements we're currently constructing and working on Highway 14 already and would be accelerated under this plan. Those are the types of user benefits that are probably and most likely more important and more valuable than the inflation costs alone. We have seen success in bonding. The legislature has dabbled in bonding since about 2000 in small bits and pieces, and has seen tremendous benefits from those little bits of bonding that they have done. The Moving Minnesota projects in 2000, 2001, and 2003 that benefited from bonding, Minnesota or MnDOT was able to advance projects in that program by 113 years ahead of their original schedule. The projects funded by the Governor's Bond Accelerated Program that the legislature approved in 2003, we were able to accelerate those projects by 65-some years. Madam Chair, members of the committee, the bonding program that the Governor has put forth and Representative Holberg is carrying here today is a solid, financially sound, prudent program to accomplish a great deal with highway projects in this state. We appreciate your support, and I'd be happy to answer any questions, Madam Chair.
Justin Hosting.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Mr. McCrum, just on this MVEST constitutional amendment, is the governor still supporting, as he did last year, the formula that's in statute, no change on that 60-40?
The governor has indicated that he supports the language as was passed by the legislature in 2005. He has not expressed any preference or statement about some of the discussions about changing that language, and he is willing to take a look at whatever the legislature passes or what comes through in the discussions among the coalition and members. But he wanted to make it very clear that he can support the language as was passed, and if the legislature chooses to make some changes that would improve that language, he could be supportive of that as well.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Magnus.
Madam Chair, Mr. McFarland, thank you for the presentation. I notice on page 3 of 3 of this, you've got about $1.3 billion dedicated to projects and so on. You've got about $1.2 billion left. I've got a couple of questions on that. Do you anticipate, or could you tell me what years you're looking at? I noticed you've got earliest advance letting date. You have current year planned construction. And so the earliest advanced letting date, what really does that mean? Can that project, for example, start in 2008? Let's take the first project we see. Can that project start in 2011 then instead of 2015?
Madam Chair, Representative Magnus, it's a very good question. What we did in taking a look at these projects is just without considering how we may have to stage projects in our construction program, we just looked at individual projects themselves and estimated if they were advanced, what would be the earliest year to which they could be advanced by just that project alone. Now, as in the past, the legislature, when looking at these kinds of projects, have made some changes to the proposals. They've put some restrictions on when the bonds can be let. They might change the level of bonding here and there. So we tried not to tell when talking about a particular project that come, you know, no matter what is passed by the legislature, your project will be advanced to this date. We had to leave a little bit of leeway for any changes the legislature might make, the level of bonding that might be available in the early years versus the later years. And so while these are the earliest years these projects could be ready for advancement, there might be some pluses and minuses as we work to stage the projects based on how the bill is passed.
Madam Chair, Mr. McFarland, is your intention, I see in the initial $1.3 billion, you're about approximately 50% metro, 50% greater Minnesota. Is your intent to continue that out on the remaining little over $1 billion? How do you see that shaking out, the metro versus rural?
Madam Chair, Representative Magnus, it may not work exactly that way, but that is the way we attempted to manage the 2003 package. I think the legislature has made themselves pretty clear that, you know, that's kind of the split in these packages that they would like, and we are looking at the package in that fashion.
Madam Chair, one more question, and thanks for that, Mr. McFarland. Out of the $1.2 billion, are you familiar with Highway 60 in the southern part of the state?
In the extreme southern part, from Worthington to Bigelow.
Well, that would
be on the.
I see you have that in there. I just didn't want you to forget the rest of it. We need to get back. So, just to throw a plug in, we don't cotton to this two lane to four lane to two lane to four lane all the time out there. I'm confused enough going down that road. So, as soon as you can get it,
Madam Chair, Representative Magnus, your plug is noted.
Thanks.
Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a number of questions. I don't know if I'll get to them today, but certainly in the coming few days. Your bill is not at the same purpose that your debt service schedule is. You got bond issuance $50 million, and your bill is written for $15 million.
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, the bill talks about $50 million in fiscal year 2007. We have that $50 divided into two separate amounts within that fiscal year, $15 million prior to the passage of the constitutional amendment and $35 million contingent on passage of the constitutional amendment. But that total, that $50 million, is in fiscal year 2007.
Madam Chair, those are... there's another area, and I see 15 and 15, but there must be another $20 million in there somewhere. What is the difference between the column that says defined minimum invest for debt on government's plan and the percent of the fund for total debt not covered by new invest?
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, I'm sorry, which columns are you talking about?
It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the sixth column and the last column.
Okay. Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, you're referring to the column that does show some red numbers.
Right.
First, and I'll address that one first. In that column, that represents the debt service on the governor's plan only, no other debt service against the Trunk Highway Fund, that in that particular year, where the debt service on the governor's $2.5 billion exceeds the amount of money coming from the new MVEST revenues in that particular year. So, for example, I'll talk again about fiscal year 2017. In fiscal year 2017, working my way across, it is anticipated that the motor vehicle sales tax amendment will provide $112 million of additional revenue to the state trunk highway fund. The debt service on the governor's plan alone in that year, that's the peak year, will be $226 million. The difference between what is available from the new MVEST revenues and the debt service in that year is that red number, $114 million, in that particular year. Also in that year, to move back one column, there will be $1.46 billion of revenue in the Trunk Highway Fund, excluding the new MVEST revenue. We never put the new MVEST revenue, actually, we set that aside. So from existing traditional sources from the Trunk Highway Fund, there will be $1.46 billion. The $114 million of that debt service that's not covered by new MVEST is 7.81% of the Trunk Highway Fund revenues in that year. Now, if you go all the way to the end, Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, what we have done there, because we have received questions from legislators, if you add on top of the $114 million of debt service from the governor's plan to other debt service against the Trunk Highway Fund, then you get to $160 million total of debt service against the Trunk Highway Fund that is not covered by the new MVEST, which represents in that year about 11% of the Trunk Highway Fund. So all, Representative Earhart, Madam Chair, if you take all of the debt against the Trunk Highway Fund that is anticipated and currently in place, in 2017, you'd be spending all of your MVEST, new MVEST, and 11% of the Trunk Highway Fund. That's the peak year.
Madam Chair, and Mr. McFarland, some information I have that the state has already committed through previous legislation $620 million in trunk highway bonds with a debt service of $837,940 million still owed on previously authorized trunk highway bonds. So that's what you're talking about here?
If you take a look at the second page, Representative Earhart, and the total column, third to the last column, that $891.98 million through fiscal, that's a total of today through fiscal year 2038 of existing debt service and debt service on these small capital projects in this bonding bill this year. So your numbers of 830 some is consistent in rough terms with those numbers.
This, the whole debt service on existing and new invest money, if it happens, peak year is 11%.
11%, that's correct.
Okay. You actually could do this with a 5-cent tax, gas tax increase, and you wouldn't have any debt service. You wouldn't have to pay out $1.4 billion in interest. But I know that's impossible. You can't think that way. So,
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, you would need a 6-cent gas tax increase, or just below a 6-cent gas tax increase, to fund the debt service on the governor's plan. And you would be paying the debt service and the interest on the governor's plan. In order to match the investment power of the governor's plan in the years between 2007 and 17, you would have to increase the gas tax by roughly 11 cents a gallon right now.
I'm sure that's not the information I have, but then I didn't run these figures.
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, the MVEST constitutional amendment is worth just under a 6-cent gas tax increase to the state trunk highway fund.
Yeah.
So it would take roughly a 6-cent gas tax increase to fund the governor's bonding plan.
Right.
But you could not match the governor's bonding plan, his investment power in 2007 and 17, with a 6-cent gas tax increase. You could match the debt retirement schedule, but you could not fund as many projects, accelerate the types of projects that the governor's plan accelerates with a 5 to 6 cent gas tax increase.
Representative Earhart.
And Chair, what about the other elements in here? You're funding the trunk highway system, but what are we doing about the rest of the folks that like to feed on the fallout from the gas tax and the tab fees and so forth, as it filters its way through the system?
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, one thing I want to make sure is understood is the governor's bonding plan does not touch any money going to the county state aid highway fund, the CASA fund, or the MASA fund from the passage of the constitutional amendment. The local units of government, counties, cities, the transit interests that receive money from the passage of that amendment, all of that money will go to their intended users. This is a plan that is built only on the new MVEST revenues to go to the trunk highway fund.
Well, Madam Chair, you're not really putting any new money, you're putting dribbles and jobs in from that.
Madam Chair, if the MVEST question is on the ballot and it passed, there would be increased revenues to the highway user distribution fund, which in turn would increase revenues to the various components of that. So you're right, this proposal doesn't provide money directly in the bonding program, but the passage of the MVEST certainly will, and that will be what we'll discuss on Thursday.
Well, of course, Madam Chair, this is all predicated on the fact that that thing is going to pass. By the time we get done screwing around with it over here, it'll be hung out to dry, more than likely. Hopefully not, but it's apt to go that way. With all the warring factions that are going on, I know you've heard about those, but you don't deal with them, so you don't have to worry about that. Why are we monkeying with this plan now that doesn't really need to take place until hopefully we pass the invest?
Well, Madam Chair, I think Mr. McFarland stated very clearly at the beginning of his remarks that as we have looked at other regions that have passed initiatives for more money for transportation, people that talk about the success of those talk about the key components of having a list of projects that the voters would actually be able to evaluate some tangible results from their willingness to support a ballot initiative. This plan would provide that.
Well, Madam Chair, that's probably the biggest hoax of all. Let's go back to 2003 and detail for us what plans were not completed in the time that they were supposed to be completed, that we set forth, because those plans were already on the shelf, and here's what we're going to do, and it didn't get done.
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart.
Now you're going to lay for us a bunch of things that are already on the shelf, I think, or close to it on the 20-year plan, and they'll come back to the 10-year plan, so to speak.
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, from the 2003 plan, there have been and will be 18 of the projected 19 major capital safety and preservation projects delivered by that plan. We lost one project. We lost one project from that plan, and we had to delay another. The one project we lost was the Highway 494, Highway 169 interchange, and that was lost in the midst of the delay of the Federal Transportation Act, the two-year delay of passage of the Federal Transportation Act and the lack of anticipated federal funds flowing from that act. The other project we had to delay a year was up on Interstate I-35, 694, Unweave the Weave project, which is now under construction. So, Madam Chair, from the perspective of dealing, as we have, I think, testified in other legislative hearings, from the perspective of dealing in one of the most historically difficult times with respect to the flow of federal funds and the delay of the passage of the Federal Transportation Act, and when we have seen states that have, in some cases, deferred or delayed their entire capital investment programs because of those problems, to have lost one project of 19 that were projected to be funded with the governor's plan, I think is a credit to MnDOT and the people who worked there.
And, Mr. McDonald, I'll have to say, those of us on Highway 14 are very appreciative because our husband's for it. Representative Earhart, you may have some more questions. I just have to say, we have a number of testifiers and a number of other members that also have questions. So,
Just let me add one more.
Okay.
I've been wearing the base for some years. You're still short of money here, as far as I can see. We go to the Crosstown project, which went out to buy money from the tabloid and other sources to work. That's exciting. And now we're still short of money. We don't know if that project's going to fly or not. After all this time, I'm looking at a project. She's here. It says maximum payout schedule is an estimated work project in which you're going to ask the contractors to float the debt service on this for several years. I believe, if I'm reading this correct, because you don't have the funds flowing still, and you don't have the money.
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, you are correct. We have an innovative financing plan as part of our RFP for the Crosstown project. That financing plan is built on a payout curve over the life of the four-year Crosstown program. The Crosstown project will be paid in full over those 4 years. The payout curve that we have proposed to contractors goes along with the schedule of when we receive federal obligation authority and when we receive federal funds and when we can pay those federal funds to the contractors. Yes, you are correct that we do in this plan. It is innovative. It is different. It is being let under a special innovative financing program under the federal government to analyze this type of program. We are not asking contractors to carry multi-year debt on these. We provide annual payouts that help help roll their money through. But it is different. You are correct. And we'd be happy to, we'd like to wait until the bids come in to see how contractors have evaluated this, and then maybe at that time, after we've gone through that, to come in and discuss this innovative program with the legislature.
Okay. Yeah. Closing.
This is it.
That's certainly going to add to your cost if you require the contractors carry part of the debt. And this is true in questioning a number of your people that come over to testify. when they have to provide money from wherever, whatever source, they're moving monies around so that they can meet the requirements of this specific job, just as they did with the tablet. But what that means is, because we're not doing enough of our own funding here, it means that somebody gets disappointed out there in Marshall or wherever you're from, Highway 14, that money is not there because it gets pulled back to do something else. Because we're not providing the steady flow of money, not borrowing money, but pay as you go, which we should be doing. And you know that, everybody in the department knows that we need to put money out of our pockets into the plan and not shift the burden off to someone down the road. Thank you.
Representative Larson, you've been patiently waiting.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm always willing to listen with interest to Representative Earhart's questions, and I really, frankly, this is a follow-up to part of his line of questioning. Because, Mr. McFarland, you've stated that this really doesn't impact other transportation funding, but can you explain for me again in the years 2016 on to 2029 where the dollars that are in red are coming from?
Madam Chair, Representative Larson, those dollars will be covered by growth to the Trunk Highway Fund, from a small amount of growth to the Trunk Highway Fund from gas tax, tab fees, the existing level of MVUS that's going to the Trunk Highway Fund, and federal funds.
Representative Larson.
So, Mr. McFarland, you're fairly confident that growth in that is going to cover these figures.
We've made very conservative estimates of growth from the current sources of revenue to the Trunk Highway Fund. We've made estimates of growth in gas tax revenues, estimates to tab fee revenues over years, estimates from the existing level of MVES transfer that's in law and federal funds, and that we are confident. I mean, the Trunk Highway Fund grows every year, albeit relatively slowly, and that's what's shown in that blue line on your chart. And so some of that growth in these years will be used to finance the debt on this plan. That is correct.
Well, Madam Chair and Mr. McFarland, I think that's where you miss or you lose a bunch of us, because we've been sort of putting up with the scheme of you know, it's at least the perception that the administration is scattering wildly about trying to fund the projects that are in the plan. That certainly is the case with the crosstown, and that's of great concern. As I look at this table, if I have a project that's scheduled some ways out here, for example, the 35W-494 project, and that's not in my list here, I'd likely not want to vote for the MVES dedication, knowing that that what's in your plan here is not going to cover my project, and it is likely in 2016 and beyond going to steal from where my project would be funded from. And so I think that this is a very difficult plan to support without us taking a look at some additional revenues. I think if the administration was willing to come to the table, and I think that's a great frustration around here, that they are not, at least even to some degree, in terms of growing revenue, perhaps it would be a different conversation. You know, the governor likes to talk about approving the largest transportation bill in history. The reality is he's vetoed the largest transportation bill in history and has yet to come to the table on this issue. And it's frustrating to see a plan that ultimately, in my eyes, will steal from many communities and many projects to pass what I think is nothing more than an election year scheme.
Representative Holbert. Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Larson, I think that if you look at the column just past the red line column, you'll see what a small percentage of the Trunk Highway for debt service is in the big scheme of things. And I think the other point has to be made, you know, there are no projects on this list in Dakota County, but the reality is when we have the ability to fund these large dollar projects, they get out of the way of other things. And so I know my area is very frustrated. And, you know, there's nothing for Dakota County. And, you know, I have to remind them, of course, about Wakota Bridge. You know, certainly that was a very large project. But when we have an ability to fund these large projects, then some other things are able to be done in the other areas of the Trunk Highway Fund, and projects are able to move up faster. Absent this bonding program, I don't know what would happen with the 494, 390, or 35W interchange, but it's not going to happen any sooner. And that's for sure.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Hilbert, well, to be sure that you understand that my comments weren't directed at you. They're directed at the administration's plan. We haven't always agreed on how to fund transportation, but you have been willing to sit down and talk about it. It's clear to me that perhaps 35W and 494 doesn't get done any sooner without doing this, but it might get done later if we do this. And that's what my concern is that we, again, move forward a plan that we shouldn't feel confident about it covering the debt service, because the administration's record in this area doesn't allow us to have that confidence. And so that's where my concern lies. But it certainly isn't directed at you or thinking that this plan is a bring home the bacon bill for Dakota County. I know that that's not the case. But I think that there are other motives that are not yours that are at play here.
And I'm sure there's a number of people that have traveled quite a ways, and I would at least follow them sometime. And we're certainly going to have this discussion again on Tuesday as we try to put together a bill. But I think that the administration should be recognized for the fact, if you compare their bonding program last year to this year, I think this plan went a long ways in addressing many of our concerns relative to how aggressive it was and what percentage of the Trunk Highway Fund would be used for debt service. And I appreciate this. I mean, this is a reasonable plan, and certainly the administration would like to have as big a number as possible in that headline or that press release, but I think that this has been put together as a very thoughtful proposal and did take into account many of the comments that they heard last year.
Representative Anderson, Ms. Risler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. McFarland, you exude a lot of confidence from the administration that this bill will pass on the November ballot. I think the administration has a lot of work to do between now and the ballot time to make sure that your confidence stays there, because my area doesn't have that. I don't sense that there's a lot of confidence in seeing it get passed, just to give you that heads up. My question is, how accurate are your timelines here on your sheet 1 through 3 on moving up these projects? Because Terry Humpert from the District 3 office has told our constituents in Buffalo that the Monticello, the Buffalo four-lane highway, the bid would start in 2008. You're saying here on this end, 2013 moved up to 2009. So I'm concerned that what I've been told just not more than 3 months ago, that they're going to start their project in 2008, and this here closed 2009 at the earliest. And I'm just wondering where that information is coming from.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, your first comment on MVEST. Just to be absolutely clear, this bonding program, the bond authorizations that are in this bill, are contingent upon passage of that amendment. So if for some reason, and I certainly hope not, that amendment were to fail in November, these bonds would no longer be authorized. So the legislature is not authorizing and hanging, you know, sticking their necks out on the bonding. Secondly, to your point about the years, these are fiscal years. Fiscal year 2009 begins July 1st of 2008. So we may be talking about a comment about a construction season, but I'm not. I without talking with Terry, I can't be sure. This is a fiscal year 2009 date, and it could in fact be that the project would be a fiscal 2009 date, but a construction season of the summer of 2008.
Madam Chair,
Senator Anderson,
Mr. McFarland, I'm taking it they're basing this acceleration of projects on the MVES being passed, moving up from 2013 to 2009. What Mr. Humphrey was telling us is that that's without the MVES, that it was going to be in fiscal year 2009 to start, just moving up the timeline.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, these numbers came from the district, so we'll have to check with the district on what they might have told you.
Madam Chair, okay. I know that there's at least eight people that need to testify, and given that we have less than a half hour left, we could move to testimony. And
absolutely. We have, I'm sorry, Representative Leader, is your question for Ms. McFarland?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have questions, but I don't want to ask them, but I just want to ask a question. Are we voting on this bill today?
This will be laid over. That possible inclusion. Okay, we have next, Mr. Henches. Welcome from Mankato.
Madam Chair, my name is Pat Henches, H-E-N-T-G-E-S. I'm city manager of Mankato and also the secretary treasurer of the Highway 14 Partnership. I would like to speak on behalf of Highway 14 and specifically any funding measure that would expedite the overall construction of 14 from its two and four lane configuration to a full four lane. As we represent the 24 communities and about 79 affiliates, we've been essentially advocates for 14 for approximately 10 years. We've seen some progress, but very frankly, 14 is exactly what example of exactly what the state of highway funding is in Minnesota. It has severe safety problems, has very important life link for our communities along 14 for economic development purposes. Highway 14 is one of the most dangerous segments of highway in Minnesota, and in fact most of the fatalities that we've seen lately on Highway 14 have been on the two-lane segments or the underdeveloped portions of the four-lane segments. It, very frankly, is a highway that the meandering, as Representative Magnus has mentioned, from 2 to 4, 4 to 2, back and forth, has really been a problem in terms of the fatalities and the safety of that highway. It's labeled as an at-risk highway by MnDOT. We're seeing highway daily counts of anywhere from 6,000 vehicles to 18,000 vehicles on some segments of the highway, and we're going to see traffic increase dramatically in 2008. Mankato recently is the site of a significant million square foot distribution center, over 700 employees, and countless trucks will increase the traffic on some segments of 14 by as much as 10% when the doors open in 2008 on that highway. Economic development-wise, this is, as I mentioned, a lifelink for southern Minnesota. It connects Mankato and the balance of the Mayo health system with Rochester. It is the highway home for 3M, Kraft, some of the largest soybean processors in the world in Mankato. It is very important for our continued economic vitality. I should mention that Highway 14 has, the partnership has really supported any measure that would begin to expedite the construction. This, hopefully, if funds were programmed from this effort to Highway 14, it's only going to fund approximately 23 miles of the 44 miles that need the four-lane expansion. Yeah. There is at least $130 million of additional construction after this funding that is necessary in 14. I should indicate that what I've seen basically in my years in advocating for 14 is that we've almost seen $10 million increases annually in the construction counts, even on this segment from Waseca to Owatonna that we're talking about. I think the current estimate is $130 million, and we're looking at possibly an increase of that in the next few years, unless some type of measures are taken to get funding on the Highway 14 and very quickly.
Thank you, Mr. Yes, Representative Ehrhardt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. 3-4 years ago, a representative from your area came into Finance Committee and asked for money for Highway 14 with a couple of mayors from down your way, and I took them all out in the hall and said, you talk to your representative about voting for a funding increase, which would be a gas tax or something else, and the answer was no, they hadn't. I said, well, you should talk to her because she's standing right here. And keep talking to your representatives. If they want funding for 14, they got to vote for the increase in the funding to do that. Have you been talking to your representatives?
Representative, or Chairman, Representative Ehrhardt, yes, we have been a strong advocate and have talked to essentially all our legislators along 14 to support whatever measure, whether it be an increase in gas tax or an increase in some measure of advance funding, as I understand this bill does, to expedite the project. We certainly have been loud and vocal advocates of a number of different measures, including the gas tax at the Capitol.
Madam Chair, I wasn't the only person. There were something like $6 billion in projects that people came in with and asked for funding for their particular project, and only one or two of them would suggest that they would vote for any increase in funding. So that's kind of a catch-22. If you want a project, you should be able to vote for funding. So,
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess this is my question of the day. Do you support the constitutional amendment language as was passed through the legislature last year?
Madam Chair, Representative, we do not, we support the constitutional amendment, but our group is also advocating amendment changes, including the dedication of 60% for highway funding.
Any other questions? Or Representative Larson?
Just a follow-up to that, Madam Chair and Mr. Hinch's. If the legislature is unable to, or nothing occurs in terms of a change to that ballot question, what will the position be of your organization in favor of or against the constitutional amendment?
Mr. Hinches.
At this point in time, Madam Chair, Representative, at this point in time, the committee has determined. The committee has determined that we would address that after the session is concluded. But again, we are advocating as a group a change in the constitutional amendment to see that we have highway dedication funding.
And Madam Chair, if I might, yes. 7 testifiers that are on my list. I don't know how many more. I will have to leave no matter what at 2:15. If you want to continue past that, I'm certainly your chairing the meeting at this time, but I think we need to limit each testifier to 2 minutes if we're going to be able to move forward.
Madam Chair, I have 15 seconds, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I can't help but noting, Mr. Hinches, that Mankato is a member of the coalition of greater Minnesota cities that is represented by Flaherty and Hood, and that the coalition of Highway 14 partnership is also represented by Flaherty and Hood. I would point out that those organizations may be in conflict and they shouldn't have the same lobbyists.
Do you have a comment?
You may want to take that back, Mr. Hanna.
You don't have to comment.
I think we can hold back.
I think we can. Okay. And the next one, I have, Representative Holberg, do you have?
I have Mayor Hovland, but I think at this time, Steve Schneider from the Highway 60 Coalition, maybe we should take them in the order that they've traveled.
Mr. Schneider?
In case they need to get moving. And
thank you. Yes.
Welcome to the committee.
And if we can, our chair has requested 2 or 3 minutes, and I believe we do have until 2:15, so we have 20 minutes, so we're ready to get all of our testifiers in. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Stephen Schneider. I am the president of the Southwest Minnesota Highway 60 Action Corporation. This corporation was founded approximately 40 years ago in the spring of 1965 to promote the improvement of Trunk Highway 60. The slogan at the corporation at that time was, "Pray for me, I drive Highway 60." This is primarily due to the numerous accidents and deaths that had occurred along that roadway at that time. Over the past 40 years, much of Trunk Highway 60 has gone from a narrow two-lane highway to a four-lane expressway. More recently, this highway has been designated as an interregional corridor linking the Twin Cities with Sioux City, Iowa, Nebraska, and ultimately west to Denver, Colorado. The Highway 60 has become known as the Agricultural Alley in southwest Minnesota over the years due to agricultural businesses that have developed along this corridor. This highway also serves as one of the highest entry points for tourism into the southern, along the southern border, and second only to Interstate Number 35. The tourist information rest stop is also located just north of the Iowa border along this part of the state. Less than 10 years ago, the state of Iowa began the reconstruction of their segment of Trunk Highway 60, which is also turns into Trunk Highway 75 from Sioux City to the Minnesota border as a four-lane highway. Iowa is scheduled to invest over $200 million in this corridor so it can be completed in a four-lane highway by 2008. There are multiple sections of this highway that are currently under construction at this time, and the state of Nebraska also is in the process of allocating funds for sections of highway to improve that to a corridor status, to a four-lane status also. Minnesota had Minnesota made a commitment to meet Iowa at the border with a four-lane highway when construction planning was done between the two states. The commitment was honored with the reconstruction of county of a four-lane highway around the city of Bigelow, which is located at the border. Unfortunately, this leaves a gap in the four-lane highway construction between Interstate 90 on the north side of the city of Worthington and the city of Bigelow. The completion of this segment of the corridor is in the state's long-term plan for approximately 20 years or more out into the future. The final environmental impact statement has been completed. Final design can be completed within a short period of time, and the construction could begin once the funding becomes available. The Southwest Minnesota Highway 60 Action Corporation is requesting that the funding be made available through the state transportation bonds to complete this interregional corridor, finishing this vital connection into Minnesota. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And if it's okay with the committee, I would like to allow all our testifiers to be able to speak, and then we could have questions at the end if there's still time. Thank you. And then, Holberg, I'm going to call your next witness.
Well, Madam Chair, now I'm going to get in trouble because I have no idea mileage-wise who's the next on this list, but I'm going to take a stab at it and say Mayor Mark Stephenson from Maple Grove and then Mike Tempnier from Brooklyn Park on deck.
Okay. Mr. Stephenson? Mayor Stephenson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's my pleasure to be here once again this year to talk about Highway 610. We're here to support the bonding package to provide the funding for this along with many other highway projects throughout the state. As the committee will recall, Highway 610 is a road that is partially completed through the northwest suburbs, starting at 35W and progressing west to Highway 169, where it simply dead ends in the middle of a potato field. The road needs to be completed to I-94, which, as it was originally anticipated by the MnDOT project. This Highway 610 services a vast majority of the northwest suburbs and serves not only as a road for our citizens, but for the entire northwest part of the state, connecting to major roads and facilities going north and west throughout the state. I think it's important to understand the funding history of this Highway 610. It originally was conceived back in about 1940, was originally designated and began to have right-of-way acquired in 1976. The right-of-way through the majority of Maple Grove has been acquired since the mid-1970s, and the road here, once again, needs to be built. This is a roadway that has repeatedly received funding through the federal appropriations process. There was $36 million in 1991. In the T21 of 1998, there was an additional $23.3 million, and most recently in the Safety Lieu Bill of 2005, there was an additional $30 million appropriated by the federal government for this roadway. This roadway needs to be completed. not always a safety issue for all the northwest suburbs, but it certainly is also an economic engine, as others have noted. I think one thing of a great note for our communities in Maple Grove and Brooklyn Park and the other neighboring communities is obviously recently this body passed the hospital bill that deals with Maple Grove Hospital. The hospital that this body passed is directly serviced by this Highway 610. This road needs to be completed to fully and effectively service the hospital that this body just recently approved. I'm not going to spend any more time because I have to share my time with Councilor Trepanier, so I will pass it over to him.
Thank you, Mayor. Mr. Trepanier?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Mike Trepanier, and I'm a council member from Brooklyn Park. We have the distinction of that's where 610 dead ends. I'm here to speak in support of completing 610. The existing 610 was completed in 2000, and even though 610 dead ends in Brooklyn Park, traffic volumes are already significant. At the dead end, at 169, it's 34,000 cars a day. And just 2.5 miles east of that, it's picking up another 20,000 cars a day. It's just amazing to me. The recent completion of the third lane on 694 has really improved that east-west traffic flow, but if 610 is not completed soon, the traffic congestion again will just truly increase there because of the development in that northwest quadrant. Also, the continuation of jobs, homes, and tax value will truly be curtailed if it's not completed soon. And then to go on to part of the force behind this is the Target Corporation and the campus that we're talking about there. They're growing at 1,000 employees per year in their headquarters function. That's just their headquarters function. And they've chosen to keep that in Minnesota, which I think we can all be thankful for. To accommodate that growth, they've acquired 335 acres, very close to that dead-end part, 169 and 610. As proposed, these numbers just blow me away. I don't know what they will do to you, but they're amazing to me. The campus could create 30,000-plus new jobs, not stealing jobs from other locations, but new jobs, not including construction jobs. And these are well-paid jobs averaging over $50,000 per year, plus all the jobs necessary to support those people. In addition, DTED is talking about additional that will generate through people and companies that provide services and products to that area, that throughout Minnesota, an additional 11,005 to 23,005 additional jobs. The economic engine is similar to downtown St. Paul on that 335 acres, and that is, again, that's amazing to me. When considering the potential for 610 when it's completed all the way through and for that section there, the Brooklyn Park Maple Grove corridor will provide a major part of the base for the Northwest Metro area. Excuse me. We are also aware of other corporate headquarters that are looking to move out there. We really believe that this will really add to making Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Minnesota a truly good place for businesses to be. So I'm just going to summarize some of those facts real quickly, and then I'll be done. It's 335 acres, 8 million square feet of new office space, 30,000 plus of the $50,000 a year jobs, plus all the jobs that will generate, 2 million square feet of commercial, 3,000 housing units, 15,000 new trips during the peak hour, and 100,000 new trips during the day. 610 needs to be built, not just for Brooklyn Park, not just for Maple Grove, but really for the economic growth of our state and the investment in that. So I thank you for the opportunity to be here, and I'll stop
right
there.
Thank you for your testimony.
And Madam Chair, I think that we should probably move very rapidly, and I know Mayor Hovland has spoke before the committee before. If you can be very, very, very
quick. 1 minute.
Because we do have people in opposition to this that have asked to testify, and they should be at least given a fair, it's not going to be a fair amount of time, but I would be very uncomfortable if we run out of time before the opposition has an opportunity to speak.
That's right. Just do 1 minute.
Thank you.
It's important.
My name is Jim Hovland. I appear not as mayor of Edina, but as chair of the 494 Corridor Commission, which you all know is six cities composed of Edina, Richfield, Bloomington, Plymouth, Eden Prairie, and Minnetonka. I've been before you before espousing pay-as-you-go and borrowing where prudent. And we haven't changed that philosophy. But it strikes us that with the inflationary costs that we've seen in construction compared with the cost of borrowing, when you've got that almost triple sort of relationship, it's caused us to rethink that some borrowing may be at higher levels than normal may be somewhat prudent for you. To me, the key issue for all of you to think about is what is the overall cost savings caused by accelerating these projects compared with the cost of funding that extra $1.4 billion in debt service to use the MVEST funds, assuming the MVEST constitutional amendment passes, to basically leverage $2.5 billion in borrowing. Quickly, I will tell you that I would speak on behalf of the project that was the one of 19 left out in 2003, which is 169-494 interchange. It's a $150 million project. MnDOT will tell you that there's $2.3 of benefit for every dollar of cost. The interchange has a terrifically high crash rate. The crash rate there, the severe crash rate, is 3 to 5 times the average for that type of intersection where there's interstate that meets an expressway. The regular crash rates are 2 to 3.5 times what they should be. We were in the 10-year build at one point in time. We aren't anymore. We'd love to be back in there, but we recognize that you have to exercise your wisdom on how much borrowing needs to take place here. We're still in favor of new money. Okay. And the 5-cent gas tax, 6-cent gas tax doesn't scare us a bit.
Thank you, Mayor. Appreciate it.
Madam Chair, there also in the audience was Paul St. Martin from City of St. Paul, and I don't think we're going to have time for his testimony, but on my opposition list I have both Leslie Davis and Byron Dale. And I've had my back to the audience. I see Mr. Davis.
Madam Chair, the Mayor of St. Louis Park is here, too, to speak on the telephone. I don't know if you need to talk about
that.
Mr. Davis is here.
Mr. Davis, okay.
Chair, members of the committee, Leslie Davis in the city of Minneapolis. Borrowing any more money is a bad idea. We can't continue to borrow money and pay interest on it, because by the year 2016, all the earnings of all the people will not be able to service the debt because it's increasing at such an accelerating rate. The way to finance roads and bridges and to take care of them in the state of Minnesota is to have banks fund the roads and bridges interest-free and debt-free using the Minnesota Transportation Act. And what that would do is require state banks to fund the roads and bridges by simply ledgering the money over to the Department of Transportation and taking the project number for each project is approved by the legislature. You folks will have control of the projects. And then the bank will carry that as the asset. They'll ledger the money over to the Department of Transportation, who will pay for the roads and bridges, and we'll be on our way. Debt-free. This is a very, very bad idea to try to pass a constitutional amendment to modify it and to raise the taxes. You know, we can't do it now. You know the poem, they say, taxes land, taxes wage, tax the bed with any lays, tax the car and tax his boat, and if he hollers, grab his throat, you know, and all of those kinds of things. No more taxes, and no more raising and borrowing money in order to do roads and bridges. The Minnesota Transportation Act is the way to go. Thank you very much for your time, and I appreciate
Thank
your
you.
Hard work in trying to solve this problem. We all support good, safe roads and bridges.
That's right.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Mr. Dale?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I agree with Representative Earhart that you ought to pay as you go.
Can you state your name for the record, please?
Byron Dale. My name is Byron Dale. And the bill that Leslie talked about should be before this committee shortly. I've been promised a hearing. And it is titled Senate File 320. Leslie spoke about the debt being so great, and that's what scares me so much is Governor Pelini acts like a young child turning loose of the credit card and don't think there's any consequences. And yet, I have an email from the Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis that says the figures that debt will grow so much by 2016, that at just 6% interest, the debt will be $1 billion greater than the consumer income. And this program is, we're talking about debt into 2017 and there won't be any money to pay for it. Now that's not, this is what the Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis said. Also, and I know Bill 320 is a little bit moody, some of you, but you've all heard about it. Also, we have an email which is on the back of the copy that passed out from the FDIC that says this concept will clearly work and will be sanctioned by the FDIC. And that's really all I have to say, that you need to really consider these other options before you go and bond the people and send all the money in Minnesota to New York for the benefit of the bond companies and the banks. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dale. Representative Holbert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I was informed that the mayor of St. Louis Park and the city manager of St. Louis Park, Mr. Herman, are here. And I'm sorry that we don't have time for them to testify, but they were in the audience. And in summary, I would just like to state that I think this is a reasonable bonding plan. I believe that nearly everybody in the transportation sector, whether it be lobbyists, people at MnDOT, and certainly the members of this committee, recognize the importance of getting the motor vehicle sales tax amendment to the ballot in a way that we can get it passed and it makes sense. I think this bonding program with the list of projects will help show the voters a tangible list of items that they could expect to see happen as a result of supporting the dedication of the sales tax on motor vehicles for transportation purposes. And I would like to renew my motion that this be laid on the table for possible consideration in the finance bill on Tuesday.
Okay, we have one more minute if anybody has any other questions. Otherwise, the motion is made and it is now will be included for possible inclusion in the bill. Any other questions? Otherwise,
Madam Chair, if I might, just for committee members, information on Thursday, we'll hear the variety of MVES bills. Representative Abrams has one, Representative Lanning, and then there's a resolution being carried by Representative Gunther. We're waiting for a letter from the Attorney General's office, which will give his opinion on if we can change the current language, if so, the best way to do it. And then my intent is that those bills would also be laid on the table on Thursday, and then next Tuesday, the 11th, we'll put together the transportation omnibus bill.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. With that, the meeting is adjourned.